Beneath her squirming 2-year-old, beneath her rustling gown, Selma could feel herself bleeding. It had started an hour ago. A subtle trickle of guilt, and like a trickle of falling dust at the border of the city caverns, it warned that the way forward was dangerous. Selma squeezed Pelly tighter. Her daughter squeaked protest, so she released a little, nuzzled down between Pelly's puffed curls and inhaled the sweet scent of calla oil where her hair parted. She risked a glance down the brass dinner table at her partner, Zaref. Zaref sat deep in conversation with their elder son, the fingers of one pale hand buried in his silver hair, while their younger son listened raptly. Seeming to sense her glance, Zaref looked up and his lips curved into a smile. She knew those fingers, those lips. A lick of heat, the memory of pleasure, and then the fear struck her in the stomach, as unspeakable as the blood. O holy Hela, in your mercy, preserve my health. Keep my senses intact. Selma hid the tremors of her hands by rubbing them into Pelly's back. With a giggle, Pelly started kissing her cheeks. Selma managed to return a few kisses, then tried to pull away by looking up at the electric chandelier that hung from the vaulted ceiling. 8-year-old Avon tugged at her left hand, playing with the ruby drops dangling from her bracelet. "Can I wear your bracelet, Mother?" Caught in the breath of doom, she couldn't bear to make Avon frown. "Not now, but someday, all right." Avon circled her wrist with her thin fingers, golden like Selma's own, and sighed. "It's so pretty." Not the word she would have used. The rubies looked like drops of blood. She had no doubt what Zaref had meant by them. Blood is precious. When she'd first begun her bleeding, Mother had taught her the same. In this age of decline, the noble blood of the Grobel race was not to be wasted. Well, she hadn't wasted it. 7 pregnancies in 20 years of partnership with Zaref, 5 live births, 4 of the children perfectly normal, and while Pelly's albinism might be recessive, it could do little harm here in the city caverns. Their beautiful, brave Enziel had just partnered into the 8th family to great acclaim. Meanwhile, however, the decline continued, and no success was ever enough, even success paid for in blood. Another trickle made her want to scream. "Off you go now," she said instead, lowering Pelly's feet to the floor. The girl ran to her nurse escort and patted the leg of his black silk suit. The escort frowned. His Imbati caste mark tattoo furrowed between his brows. "Pelly," Selma scolded. "We don't touch the Imbati. Are you a big girl?" "Big girl." Pelly lifted her white hands away and wrung them over her head contritely. "Big girl." "And who are a big girl's hands for?" "Pelly." "Ask if you want your Virid to hold you." Pelly's lip trembled, but she managed. "My please?" "Of course, young mistress," the escort replied. He swooped her up in a twirl that turned the threatening tears into a cry of joy and carried her from the dining room. Selma sighed. Pelly was so big now. Perhaps if she'd been smaller, more dependent on the breast, this doom could have been postponed. To Avon, she said, "Time to get ready for bed, darling." Avon's escort caught her glance and passed it to other Imbati of the household, who quickly withdrew. At last, even her sons Brinks and Corum came to kiss her and excuse themselves to their shared rooms. She had to speak now, while the blood could still protect her. She turned toward Zaref at the head of the table, but fear twined up into her throat. Zaref gave her an uncertain smile. Zaref's Imbati woman moved, noticeable now as she left her station behind his shoulder. Imbati Ustin, tall, broad-shouldered and muscular, with her hair and several long braids that looked almost white against her tailored blacks, easily pulled out one of the brass chairs that stood empty between them. Zaref stood up, still smiling, and moved to the new seat. Then Selma's own manservant, Grivi, pulled out the chair beside his. Oh, to be close to him again. She couldn't move. If she got close, they would kiss. If they kissed, they would make love. If they made love, she would get pregnant again. And even if she managed not to lose the pregnancy, there would be labor and pain. Not just pain, but pain, like with Pelly. The screaming, the blank darkness. She'd wake up feeling like someone had dismembered her, her left leg dead to the hip, and this time maybe her right too. Maybe this time she wouldn't regain her ability to walk, or maybe this time she wouldn't wake up at all. "Zaref, I can't," she blurted. "Selime?" She stared down at her hands clutched in her lap, at the beautiful bracelet. The ruby drops looked dark in the shadow of the silk tablecloth. "I know blood is precious. I know my duty to the race. But I just can't anymore." The guilt sharpened when spoken aloud. She tried not to imagine what words might come from his mouth in reply. Perverse, selfish, unworthy. Zaref cleared his throat. "Selime?" Something touched her shoulder. Oh, mercy, that was his hand. Her whole body clenched in on itself, hardened. Her chest felt like a geode, unable to admit breath, crusted inside with fear. Zaref pulled his hand away. "Oh, Selime, my jewel, my life's partner, my blessed maiden Ain, I'm sorry." She shook her head, tried to breathe. "Grivi," said Zaref, "is she all right?" The Imbati made no answer. She could hear Zaref stand, pace the length of the table, but if she tried to respond, she'd only moan or scream. Abruptly, he left through the bronze door to the sitting room. She could hear him out there murmuring to his Ustin. "Mistress," Grivi said in his deep, soft voice, "I have vowed to protect you." Her Grivi had helped her more in her recoveries than anyone, but could she really ask him to protect her from Zaref? Was that even possible? Would it mean she could never kiss Zaref again, never feel his arms around her? Did she really want such protection? She sipped a small breath. "I understand, Grivi, thank you." Then Zaref came in. Selime snapped her jaw shut. "My Selime." Zaref's voice was husky, vibrating at the edge of control. He knelt beside her feet on the silk carpet. "Alinda, help me. Surely he wouldn't demand to have her while she still bled." His breath grated. Ustin said, "You've... Nashid Selime, this is my fault." "What?" She frowned. "It's my fault. When Peli was being born, I should have... I don't know what I should have done. How could I listen to you scream and do nothing? I asked the doctors, but I only thought they would take away your pain, not that they'd..." He dragged a breath. "You went quiet so suddenly. I thought Mother Alinda had plucked your soul away and my own heart, too. And then when you woke damaged, and it was my fault." She whispered, "But you didn't do anything." Zaref shook his head. He grasped her hand, his fingers pale against her golden skin, and lifted it until her bracelet sparkled in the light. "I didn't give this to you because blood is precious, Selime. I gave it to you because your blood is precious. You are precious. I don't care what the family council says. The race doesn't deserve your life."